Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. And now, here's your host, Rick Ingram.
Welcome back to Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. This is episode 6 or 5. Do we even know? Is that about right? 6? Lucky numbers. It's 5?
Oh, it's 6?
Listen, we have no idea what's going on here. We're all very confident about what's going on with the podcast. Some of us apparently don't count certain episodes. It is 6?
It is 6.
We're getting 6.
Good job, producer.
Yeah, so the exciting part is you guys don't know anyway. You don't even know how you got here. Some algorithm made you watch this, and now you're just hooked because of just the general hypnotic tone of my incredibly monotonous voice. Thank you for being here. Our first guest today, Denise Winkleman. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. And, Denise, how are you?
I am well. How are you? Thanks for having me on episode 5 or 6.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Does one feel more special to you? Did you come in going, I hope this is the 5th episode?
I was really hoping for 7.
7?
Yep.
We'll try and work one in prior to this going on, if that's possible. Now, you're an ex-pro wrestler, is that true?
Ex-pro wrestler, yep.
Where were you doing pro wrestling at?
So I am very openly transgender.
Okay.
So I was doing pro wrestling in Cincinnati from 2003 to 2008.
Okay.
For a little promotion called the Northern Wrestling Federation. So training school, my way to pretend to be masculine and hit people with shit. So
nice. That's a good way. I mean, yeah. If you're going to, you know, get that angst out some way.
Yeah, you might as well. Like
abuse some alphas.
And just yell at people. It prepared me well for comedy. So
What was your character? What was your shtick as a pro wrestler?
So I was gimmick based. It was Dr. Melvin Winkleman as part of Mad Science. Weird Science. That's what it was called.
Weird Science?
Yep.
All right. And so you show up, you're in what? A doctor attire?
Doctor attire. So the funny thing was, a friend, we were doing promo class one day, and he just like, hey, listen, you're kind of creepy.
That's what you need friends for. Yeah, to level with you.
I was like, and you're an asshole. So,
yeah.
So he was like, could you just do a promo, like pop the boys, be like, try it as a weird scientist, as a mad scientist.
Okay.
And so I did, and I just screamed a lot. I told people I would turn them into goats, and I was like super intense.
As
like,
doctors do.
I whipped up a potion in my basement, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I did it so well, I got stuck with it for 5 years.
Then you had to keep running with it. Growing up, we watched a lot of wrestling in the 80s and 90s, and my brother had his wrestling character was Proctologist Billy. And it seemed funny until you started trying to wrestle, and then you're like, I think he's trying to give me an exam. This is tremendously uncomfortable as a wrestling move, but probably borderline fits into the wrestling theme.
It really does. Oddly enough, that's what I wanted, but he already had it. So.
Yeah. Unbelievable answer. What was your finishing move? Did you have a name for your finishing move?
I don't remember the name of the finishing move. So here's the thing is, like, I was wrestling big dudes, and I would pick them up and basically lay out with the finish, so lay them on their back. And they were all so fucking fat that I couldn't pick their asses up.
Yeah, I could see that happening. There's a very large difference in the in-shapeness of, like, pro wrestlers on TV versus a more regional wrestling event.
Yeah.
from the limited smaller wrestling events I've seen, there was a lot of dudes who looked like they could be mass shooters, and then just a lot of fat guys who,
yeah,
didn't find a trucking job, I guess.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Like, oddly enough, like, I was actually in shape. It was just everybody else was so out of shape that it was like, come on, guys, like, could you at least lay off the Taco Bell before the match?
Yeah, not something you really want to deal with. During the match, you're like, yeah. Did you eat Taco Bell again?
Yes.
That's really the finisher in a lot of ways. Now, you say you're openly transgender.
Uh-huh.
When did you start transitioning?
So it was kind of like a process. So I grew up like super religious, religious family. Like my family's so conservative, like they make the evangelicals on TV like look like they're liberal. So
wow. Okay. And where did you grow up?
Northern Minnesota, right next to Canada. So
frightening. Just in general, yep. The Canadians.
And
did you grow up with a hatred of Canada?
We did, like, yeah. bitter rivalry, like,
hockey rivalries.
Hated their maple syrup, like, fuck that.
Listen, I couldn't agree with any statement anyone's ever said more. I have a well-known, passionate hatred for Canadians. You know, they're quasi-decent people, but the more I learn about them, the more I find out it's all just a facade. They're just northern trash Americans, is really what it is.
Yes.
If we wanted that land, there wouldn't even be a Canada.
Absolutely.
But at
not.
A certain point, when we got to that northern part of Minnesota, we were like, you know what? Fuck this. Let's just go west. And now Canada is a country because of that decision.
Do we really need to go more ice and snow?
No, that was the decision. It was like, we're going to take over all of this continent. And then at a certain point, we're like, you know what? We're good.
Yes.
And that's why you exist, Canada. So don't you forget it. I assume there's no one in Canada watching. I just like to aggressively point at the camera sometimes. So
we're making a lot of friends here.
Yeah, that's what this is all about, really. All right, so you grew up religious, and so when did you know?
I knew I was different at like age 4 or 6, okay. And I would ask my grandma to like wear her dresses and stuff, and she was really cool about it, but she made sure nobody else knew.
Right. Parents can't find out about this.
Can't find out. Like, it was our secret. And so I made a conscious choice when I was 10 years old. I could either tell my parents, which nobody understood what trans was back then.
Yeah.
And I probably would have been sent to a camp somewhere. And the other option was, I'm going to make a conscious choice to be masculine. So I got really into sports. I played a year of small-time college basketball.
Okay.
And then very small Christian school. It wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
And then wrestling was really hot at the time. So I was like, well, all my buddies are into this. Like, this seems like it's really cool. Like, I can talk shit, let some aggression out. So I wrote a letter, if you can believe that, to a place in Cincinnati that had the WWE contract at the time, what NXT is now. And they responded via email because they're human.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that'll happen sometimes.
And they said, yeah, come on down and train. Like, we're moving, we're changing some stuff. So come on down. And they just wanted the money. I found out, like, the dude who was in charge of it, he probably wanted to fuck me at that point. So,
all right. So it's not that different than comedy in a lot of ways.
It's very similar.
It's you pay to get in, and you're like, well, this is an opportunity. And then later you're like, these are just con artists, and I just got screwed out of money.
Yeah, exactly right. And most of the time, somebody wants you to blow them. So.
Yeah, that happened to me at least a baker's dozen times in this comedy world. Shout out to you, Barry Sobel. It got oddly specific just now because you're a creep, Barry. All right, so then what's the time period between wrestling and starting to transition?
So I got married in there.
Okay.
And when I got, so I was like super masculine, like, in my mind, I was like, if I make it to WWE, like, all this other stuff is going to go away.
Right.
And so I was that douchebag with like 3 girlfriends at the time, like, or I'm sure as you consider it, like, that sounds great, but
yeah. I mean, again, I'm a comedian, so that's the standard move, I think, for a lot of, it's like, just get as many girlfriends. Yes. It doesn't matter how terrible all of them are.
And they were all terrible.
Yeah, that'll happen. Terrible. Usually when there's a more than one girlfriend situation, it's because all of them fill in about 0% of the need.
Exactly. Exactly right. Like, and so, yeah, I got married in there. And at that point, when the creative stuff went away, when you throw yourself really into something, then other holes start coming in that wall.
Sure.
And at that point, it's like, okay, I can't hide this anymore. And I have to address this. So in 2013 is when I fully transitioned.
Okay.
Moved across country to Denver. Actually, I started comedy in Denver. And within like 2 or 3 years, like I had accomplished everything I wanted to as far as transition went. Like, and I felt pretty comfortable with everything. And it went pretty smoothly for me, but
that's good.
But I'm very, very fortunate. I was working in a corporate job at the time that was very supportive, so it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah. And you were married. Are you still married?
I was married, and we haven't spoken in almost 10 years. So, really? So it went well. The divorce went well.
Yeah. I mean, that's a solid divorce if there's not any speaking going on. And so partner was not supportive of the decision or,
so as this started to come out, I guess I was gender fluid at the time, is what you would call it.
Okay.
Really not by choice, but it almost became an emotionally abusive thing where she was like, well, if you, I know this isn't funny, but like,
that's okay.
She was like, well, you should really thank me for being with me. Nobody else could love someone like you. And, so it became like one of those things, like you can have this secret little life, but I don't want to see it. I don't want any physical changes. And at some point it was just like, this isn't, I'm not happy.
Yeah. How
I'm
is that
happy.
Good for you?
Yeah. So I made the decision to transition and, haven't really looked back at this point.
Yeah, that's good. And then did you file for divorce or did she file?
She filed, I guess we technically jointly filed. We went to Cancun.
You went to Cancun. Listen, even though we've only had 5 and/or 6 episodes, this is our second Cancun story. The last one ends with a lot of fear of prison sex. So I don't know if that's how this went, but
it would have been a lot more fun.
Yeah. All right.
This was our honeymoon, not honeymoon trip, but our anniversary trip.
Okay.
And it was, we were both miserable. We go to Cancun, we go there for a week in September, which nobody does. So there's nobody there.
Yeah.
And we ate the buffets and she was like, why can't you just be normal for like 1 week? And I was like, well, it doesn't work like that.
So her goal was you guys go on anniversary vacation and then you just stop being you.
Yes, exactly.
Why can't you just be what I want you to be on this lovely Cancun vacation?
Which is, oddly enough, it sounds a lot like marriage, doesn't
yeah.
it?
In a strange way, it does. Especially over buffet. That's a strange time to just not be accepting of the person you quote unquote love.
Yeah. Just the worst buffet of all time too.
Yeah. I can't even imagine. I mean, a buffet in Cancun sounds like the beginning of a horrible disaster.
Yes.
I mean, I think under any circumstances, any marriage ends after the buffet in Cancun.
It does. It does.
And all right. So while you're there, do you just kind of realize like, what are we doing?
Yeah, well, it was actually coming back. I realized we were arguing the whole time, and I texted my cousin, and we had just switched cell phones, like from Verizon to Apple or something. And for some reason, she was getting all my texts, and she didn't tell me.
Oh,
so she found out that I was thinking of transitioning, and that pretty much ended the marriage at that point.
Right. Okay. And your cousin supportive of?
Yeah, my cousin was the only one who knew so I told her right before I moved to Cincinnati that okay. I was thinking of transitioning, and then I responded by becoming a professional wrestler.
I mean, it is one of the greatest overcompensations that I've heard. And now it also makes me go, how many pro wrestlers are thinking about the same path, but the steroids convince them, no, just keep getting in a ring and grabbing dudes.
I would say 99% at this point.
Yeah, a lot of them. I loved pro wrestling when I was growing up. I didn't ever think about any of that stuff, I guess. But then I've like seen multiple stories now about different guys who were at least hiding their sexuality, if nothing else. But it seems like it's fairly common in the circuit, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it's very common. The guy who was trying to fuck me when I moved out, he made it very clear that being gay was wrestling's dirty little secret at the time.
Right.
And he loved to tell me all the guys who were secretly closeted or gay. And I was like, there's nothing wrong with that, but I'm not going to suck your dick.
Right. And so this guy, he's full on just like, he's seeing you as the former college basketball player man. And he's saying, I'm going to get this guy to suck my dick.
Exactly.
And if he doesn't go for it immediately, I'm going to tell him some tales
yes.
of other dudes sucking dicks in this industry.
I'm grooming that.
That was his plan.
That was his plan.
Have you seen him since you transitioned?
I have. So his thing that he would tell everybody was, there is something there. There is something there. And he had no idea what it was. And then once I transitioned, he's like, oh, you're way too feminine for me.
Wow. Listen, I'm not looking for a lady, all right? If you want to wrestle in this league, you'll get extra macho. And then, so what do you do now? Do you live in L.A.?
I do live in L.A. So I moved from Denver to L.A. 2 weeks before the pandemic started.
Oh, good timing.
Great timing.
Yeah.
Story of my life. I make great decisions.
It's always the right time. I have a friend who also moved to the L.A. area and was like, hey, I'm going to start hitting up mics. And then like 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, something like that, everything shut down. She was just like, what the fuck do I do now?
It was terrible. It was just the worst timing of all time. It was like, yeah, I'm really going to get, you know, like really focus on comedy, like do all these mics, like get to know people, like really put the time in. And I was on my couch for a year doing Zoom comedy. So
yeah. Did you do Zoom comedy shows?
Tons.
Really?
Yeah.
I couldn't do it. I just couldn't bring myself to do comedy in my living room.
It was the ultimate epitome of laziness and just like boredom and wanting to jump out a window.
I think no matter what, it's lazy, because a lot of people are like, you got to be doing these shows. I'm like, I don't think so. And then when people were like, it's, you know, this might be what comedy is for a while, I'm like, then I guess I'm not a comedian for a while. It was a really weird time. So I'd been doing comedy for like 19 years now, and I never stopped because I've never been successful. So you just have to keep going all the time. And when it first shut down, I'm like, this is crazy. I didn't know what to do with myself. And then you start, like, I guess, judging your own value, because you're like, well, if I don't do comedy, what am I? And I didn't necessarily like everything. And so I was like, well, I just got to get back to comedy so I don't have to think about this.
Nice.
That was the plan. Just always hide through comedy.
I think that's a good plan. Let's just do that.
Yeah, it's always about just, if I can make other people laugh, I can just ignore the shit that I don't like about my life. So I'm trying to get into pro wrestling, and
I know a guy who will probably try to fuck you. So.
do I have what it takes? Because that's really the thing. I saw a wrestler die the one time I ever went to a live wrestling event.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I didn't know this was going to turn into Faces of Death, but I went and saw a WWE pay-per-view in the late 90s, mm-hmm. and... you know, we thought it would be fun. I dressed up all white trash, cut sleeves off my shirt, wore the cutoff jeans. I had my signs that, you know, just spewed hatred towards the Canadian wrestlers.
Perfect.
And while I was holding up my sign that said, it said, fuck Owen Hart. And then he fell from the ceiling and died in the ring.
Oh, my. It's your fault.
In some ways, I feel like it was my fault. And I was trying to joyously, you know, hate this guy, because one of my favorite things about wrestling in the 90s was once the Cold War ended, there was no obvious enemy. So WWE just started pushing Canada as the bad guy. And I was just like, yep, I can get on board with this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I'm trying to just, you know, play the part. And this guy falls and dies, and then it really made the experience kind of awkward.
Do you think it was the sign that killed him, or the white trash look?
You know what? It is possible. He was on the catwalk getting ready to lower down, looked down, saw my sleeveless guns, and just said, I could never live up to that. That guy must weigh 130 pounds right now, and just jumped. It was weird though, because then they kept the event going. Vince McMahon is such a shrew that he knew if they didn't have the main event, then he'd have to refund money. So he just made the wrestlers keep going out and wrestling.
I remember that. It was so awkward.
Yeah.
Like, guys were crying on their way to the ring. Like,
the oddest part, the main event was Stone Cold Steve Austin versus The Undertaker. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I think there's been maybe three matches post guy dying in the ring. And all the people with kids left. And so it's like half-filled arena. And everyone's just kind of awkwardly watching, like, what are we doing here? Why is this still going on? And they started playing The Undertaker's music, which is just funeral bells. And the entire arena is just like this uncomfortable, like, what are we doing? They had literally taken this guy's body out. He had changed color while he was in the ring from bleeding out. And they take him out, and it's literally just, at this point, like, me, my brother, a couple of our friends, and then, like, 10,000 meth-fueled white trash dudes who are like, I'm staying! We ain't going nowhere! The guy who Owen Hart was wrestling was the Godfather. He was like a pimp. And so, his music is playing. So there's like this porn music. It's like, wow, boom, wow, wow. And this pimp is walking down with hoes. He's got prostitutes with him. And then this dude just falls and dies in the ring. And then you just see the pimp kind of standing there looking around like, do I have to stay in character? So the main event, Undertaker, they start playing the funeral music. And he walks out, and Stone Cold just kind of walks out with him. At this point, they're just, no one cares. They're not trying to keep up the facade of we're mortal enemies. And they did a classic, the referee got down on his knees and they just pushed one guy over him and they pinned him, and then we left. And it was just like, well, that was super weird that they continued that. But now looking back, I'm like, you know, was Owen Hart Owen Hart trying to fuck the Godfather?
Yeah.
And there was some sort of an evil... Vince McMahon is a horrible human being. That's what I learned from it.
This got weird.
I just think the wrestling promoters, they're a lot like comedy promoters in that they're trying to take advantage of people.
Oh, like, for sure.
Like, I know someone who keeps trying to get me to do their comedy show, and I'm like, you make hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, and you pay no one anything. And it just, that kind of shit, I guess, just drives me nuts. But
no, it should. I worked with the guy in Denver. I tried to do wrestling for about 6 months after I transitioned.
Okay.
In Denver. So I was training with these guys, and this dude comes in, who wrote the Attitude Era, for WWE. And he tells everybody in the world that he writes the Attitude Era.
Sure.
And so his big claim to fame is like China, DX,
right.
The Rock, Stone Cold, like he wrote a lot for them. And so he looks at me and he says, well, you're not pretty. So I want you to be China because you're tall. And I'm not strong. At this time, I wasn't strong.
Right.
Like, and it was like, dude, I can't like just pick people up and throw them around. And
yeah, because China's like full on. She was on steroids.
And, she was on steroids. Yeah. And she was huge. Right.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, I can't do that. And I'm a good talker.
Right.
And he was like, well, you're not pretty. So I was like, fuck you.
Wow.
And then I went and did a bunch of like half naked photo shoots to prove him wrong.
Yeah, because, you got to show him up.
Yeah.
Rightly and so.
I'm just trying to get the guy who was trying to fuck me at this point. Like, that's all I'm really trying to do.
Now, so you're transitioning while you're wrestling. Are you taking estrogen then? And is that affecting strength or...
Yeah, so really what it was, so I'm very open about all this. I had been taking estrogen, but I had bottom surgery. I had gender reassignment surgery. And up to that point, my testosterone was kept purposely high for a trans woman. because it gave me energy. Like I'd always kind of struggled with energy and sex drive and things like that. So it was done on purpose. And then once I had gender reassignment surgery, well, your body pretty much stops producing testosterone at that point.
Right.
So it was like super low. And I was like, I can't even pick anybody up at this point.
Yeah.
I don't care if they're a buck 20, like it doesn't matter. So, so I do date women, and I just want that. I want any ladies who are listening right now to know that I can definitely pick you up and throw you around.
Nice. So, see, the most important part of the message was right there.
Right. Like that has changed. Like I can do that now.
So that, all right. And so you're attracted to women. And,
yes.
And when you started transitioning, none of that changes.
Yeah, none of that changed. So I tried. I tried to date dudes for 2 years.
Okay.
And it was the most mind-numbing, frustrating thing for both of us.
Yeah.
Because I would go to like concerts with my gay friends, and those guys liked every dude.
Sure.
And I liked the 1% of guys they didn't. Like I liked the guys that straight guys would switch teams for.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So like,
I didn't even know that's going on. Yeah. So we got people secret playing both sides.
Well, so is it like, so I'm thinking like Bradley Cooper, like Chris, like those sorts of looking guys.
That's the
guys,
type of dude you're going for.
That's the type of
so
dude.
So cream of the crop.
Cream of the crop. Like,
I was talking to someone and I go, are you dating anyone? They go, no, dudes, you know, there's just not any good ones out there. And I go, what are you looking for? And they go like, they need to be really awesome and look like Rob Lowe. I was like, I don't think that's really a plan.
Yeah, I it didn't work for me.
No.
So I tried for like 2 years. And so this was all before gender reassignment surgery.
Okay.
And so I was doing Grindr, which is probably the worst thing you can do. So it's like the hookup app for gay dudes.
Right.
And I was special on that app. I would turn that thing on and I would get 20 dick pics within 10 seconds.
Damn. Yeah. We talk a lot about dick pics on this podcast. Again, the penis, such a beautiful thing. I'm still trying to get the Joe Rogan fan base on board this thing. So we talk about how beautiful a cock is a lot.
It's so
it's got to be an uncomfortable vibe.
Yeah, it's so it got to the point where I would just like fuck with them. I'd just be like, oh dude, you might want to get that checked.
That
doesn't
cold.
Look right. Yeah,
that's not what you want to hear when you're sending dick pics, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it got kind of weird, but like I would go on these really nice dates with guys, and like it would be like 2-3 dates, and for one, either they were a pussy and didn't make a move, or number two, like I would just lose interest and get distracted and like nothing would ever happen kind of thing.
Bail out. Yeah.
So I was the ultimate tease. So that's
nice.
That's what I was trying to say.
Now when you're dating guys, you said you hadn't had gender reassignment surgery yet.
Not up to that point. So like I had implants at that point. So,
okay.
So I guess I was more of a fetish. I would say like, so definitely more fetishized in that world.
And they know, like you said, you're openly transgender. So you tell them up front.
Yeah, it was, I mean, on the dating apps, like I would, it's too dangerous not to.
Right. Cause someone gets upset and
somebody gets, and I was like, I can handle myself, but like,
right.
I don't want to end up in a fist fight somewhere or something.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to body slam someone.
Now, like the rednecks in the South are terrified of transgender people in general. Like they have this image in their mind. It's always like they share the stupid pictures and it's like just a dude with a beard and a dress. Yeah. And they'll be like, oh, you want this guy peeing next to your daughter? How often do you think I got to find a redneck with a daughter just to fuck with them? Is that ever something that comes up? Because that's what more my mind would go. It just, you travel the South looking for restrooms to use.
Every fucking day. did you hear the thing where Tennessee made it illegal for a business has to hang a sign now in Tennessee that says whether they'll do business with a trans person?
Really?
Yeah. So I'm just like, how do you enforce that? Like,
yeah. And you'd expect a little more progressive ideas from Tennessee. You monsters. Yeah.
It's a lot like Canada at this point, right?
Yeah. Actual murderers, the Canadians. I was so excited. Obviously not that what the Canadians were doing, but when the stuff came out about the Canadians and murdering children and all that stuff, I'm like, finally, knock them off their high horse. They won't judge us for our atrocities any longer. That's how anti-Canadian I am.
I have no idea what you're talking
that's
about.
That's all right. That's cool. Yeah, the indigenous children, they were killing them up there, apparently.
Oh, my God.
And it just came out like a couple months ago.
Oh, sure.
Publicly. So now they had to admit that there's like thousands of indigenous children that just went missing. Some of them they found in a mass grave and stuff. But
what?
The Canadian government's just like, we were trying to help them be more Canadian.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I need to start watching the news at some point.
I don't recommend that, actually. Watching the news is one of the worst experiences ever. And so your family, are they still very religious?
Family is still really religious. My dad's preaches at two very, very small conservative churches in northern Minnesota.
Okay.
And when I say small, I mean like 20 people, 30 people, something like that.
That's so like cult level.
It's kind of a cult level at this point.
And do you have a relationship with them at all?
Yeah. So my mom passed away a few years ago, and that kind of brought us closer together. My dad, oddly enough, they were somewhat accepting, like in their mind, they were trying. So it could have been worse. It also helped that I was halfway across the country away from them.
Yeah.
So what really worked as I came out to them was I had just divorced my ex, or she divorced me.
Sure.
In
her dreams.
Yeah. She took everything.
Yeah.
She's
like, I want the dick in this divorce. Yes. You're like, you can have it.
It was huge. Yeah. I mean, somebody proved me wrong at this point.
So, nice.
So I came out to my parents and I was just like, listen, I've dated multiple women at one time. I've done pro wrestling. I was married. I've done everything I can do. And it's like, I'm miserable. Like I'm at the point, like, you know, like super depressed. And it's always here. Like it's always in my mind. It's like an alarm going off every single day. I have to do this. And my dad, I think he understood that, or he at least tried to. So they were fairly supportive. Although every time like they saw one of their friends or around me, like they never introduced me as being related to them. So,
wow.
So,
yeah, I mean,
it's an awkward conversation.
Yeah. I guess it's something that they're just not comfortable dealing with, but it's nice that they at least, you know, didn't disown you to your face.
To my face. The nicest thing my dad ever said to me was I had done some fitness modeling, bikini modeling or whatever. It was a step below OnlyFans.
Okay.
He looked at some of the pictures and he was like, well, I do have to say you make a very handsome woman.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of those half compliments, I guess, where you're like, thanks, Dad.
Yeah.
But also, fuck off, Dad.
Exactly. Like... And you, Dad, you make a not attractive man. So,
well, is there social media handles or anything you want to promote that people can find you at?
Yeah, absolutely. So doing shows in LA, at Denise Winkleman, Denise_Winkleman on Instagram. That's the main one. On Twitter, it's at D_Winkleman. I kept that creepy last name, so...
I mean, Winkleman is solid. It's as a wrestler name, it's one of those things where you're like, all right, it's going to be creepy. There's no way Winkleman's not...
Yeah, the whole idea of the Mad Scientist, to be honest, was you have that creepy... They told me you have that creepy last name. You might as well just
You got to run with it. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for being on. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, and stick around. We're going to bring the next guest out, and we'll be right back, guys. Thank you. Say hi. All right, guys, welcome back. Rick Ingram Talks to Strangers. We got a new stranger in the house, JC Naccarella.
Yeah, that's
it. Is that close?
That's it. Wow. That's how I say it, at least. So
nice. Do other members of your family say it differently?
You know what? That's a good question. I don't think so, but yeah. My dad's side of the family, it's possible. We don't talk to them, so
yeah.
They could.
Listen, this is starting with a lot of questions right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Why don't you speak to your father's family? Are they...
They don't like Jews, and my mom is one of them.
Okay.
So that's basically where the line is drawn.
Yeah. Yeah, anti-Semitism is one of the best reasons to cut family members
completely
out.
Agreed.
I've
like, we don't want them
that.
Either, so it's fine.
Yeah, and what are, they're just what, like trash Christians?
They're just like, yeah, like Roman Catholic, I assume. They're from Italy, so whatever that means.
Yeah, then they're Catholic for sure. I don't think you're allowed to be Italian and not
Catholic. I think that's correct, yeah.
All right, and... you were a camp counselor at a Jewish camp?
Sure was. Not
By
only...
the way, that, the terminology of Jewish camp already makes me uncomfortable.
Oh, I mean, just wait. You're going to get real uncomfortable.
Okay, good.
So have you seen Wet Hot American Summer?
Yeah.
So that's actually, that was filmed at my camp.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like at the actual camp that I grew up in, went to, and then worked at. And it is like...
So they rented out the actual campground to film.
Yes, but they filmed during October, so the kids weren't actually at camp during production.
Smart.
But that film is exactly what summer camp is like.
Really?
100%.
So you're out there making out with a lot of dudes. A
lot of dudes.
How old are you when this is going on?
Well, so I started going to camp at 9 years old. The making out didn't start for me personally until probably 15. For others, it was younger.
Sure.
I was like a heinous child, unfortunately for me. but kids would have contests to see how many boys or girls that they could hook up with in one summer. And we would keep lists on the walls in the bunks that said, you know, like tallied your hookups, and your goal every summer was to make it onto the hookup wall.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know this is going to be hard for everyone to believe, but I was an odd looking child. And,
welcome to the club.
Yeah. And, I went to several different kinds of camps, and no one made out with me at any of them.
Not one?
Not once. I mean, that's how terrible it was. And I mean, obviously, I'm just oozing charisma, but that did not in any way translate to make out sessions.
I will say, even the least attractive guys at camp got to hook up, because there were girls like me. And I was kind of just like, I'll hook up with anyone at this point. Like, I had a huge mole on my chin,
okay.
And everyone would make fun of me for it.
Yeah.
So I did wind up getting it removed. Thank you very much.
Nice.
but at the time, it was like, I was mole girl. Like, I was, and Moly 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 from Austin Powers was like a huge quote back then. So it just like trauma.
Yeah.
Trauma all the time.
This is intense.
So the first summer that I actually made out with a boy, they like set me up with the shrimpiest weirdo, and he was the guy who did talent shows to like Lil Bow Wow and like Lil Wayne on stage, and he would like,
he's like what, dancing, lip syncing,
dance, lip sync, like tied a camp shirt around his head. It was like not
was PC. Do-rag?
Yeah. And they were like, you should make out with that guy, and I was like, down.
You're
like
done.
I'll do it.
And he was like, yo, bring mole girl over here.
Literally, probably, yes, that's probably what he said behind my back.
Wow.
He was very kind, actually, but
nice guy.
He was nice. I think he's a chef now. I'm not sure, but...
Well, he's going to be canceled when this comes
yeah,
out.
Exactly.
He was basically in blackface at Jewish camp.
Full blackface at Jewish camp, and we all cheered, so...
And so, other than making out, what exactly goes on at Jewish camp? It's just a normal camp for Jewish
kids,
correct?
Yeah, it's just a normal camp. There's nothing really Jewish about it, except that all the kids are Jews, and then we... On Friday nights, the Sabbath, we'll sing like a few Jewish songs and like call it a day. But there's Color War. There are
Color War.
Color War. Have you heard of it?
I don't think I'm familiar with you. Do you know about Color War?
No, oh, I
no
said
idea.
That like it's like a common thing.
Yeah, you did. You're like, obviously,
like everyone
you did
I
color
talk
war.
To in LA knows about Color War. My circle of friends is very small.
This is like a Charles Manson thing.
Exactly.
Where race riots.
So we had this thing called, we actually called it Olympics at camp.
Okay.
And it was a huge deal. Like, it was a huge fucking deal. And there's a red team and a blue team. And every summer, you don't know exactly when it's going to start. So it always, when it happens, it's a surprise. And we call it breakout. And there will either be like fireworks or like a celebrity will come or like something will happen.
What kind of celebrity are we talking about? You get like Screech or something?
Oh, no. I use the term celebrity beyond loosely. There was... Britney Spears was supposed to come once, but she didn't wind up
coming. She didn't make it.
So 1 year we did Shocker. Have... She didn't make it.
We do have the bass player from Dishwalla, though.
Like, we had the most random people come to camp. There was this band called No Secrets that's on... like Disney Hits Volume wow. 2. Like, they're nobody.
No secrets.
And then there was a solo
creepy
artist
shit going
called
on there.
Angel Faith, who's actually a therapist
Angel
in
Faith?
Los Angeles now. That's her real name.
Wow.
Angel Faith. And so celebrities would come or fireworks would happen. Something would happen. And then banners would show up and it would say, like, the Red Yankees versus the Blue Mets or whatever the teams are.
This is a New York based.
So the camp was actually in Pennsylvania. But okay. Those were actual color or Olympics teams 1 year. I'm not sure why they did that. Yeah. But during these breakouts, they would always call up the camper captains and it would be a surprise. And like, if you don't get camper captain, like, kill yourself. Like, if you...
Obviously. I don't even know what that means and I'm feeling
you're the leader
down.
Of the team. You have to lead all the cheers. You have to lead tug of war. Everything. Like, the world is your oyster when you are Olympics camper captain. Of course, I was not one.
You, no.
Did not even expect
no
to
one,
be one.
No one is picking Mole Girl as you are known.
Certainly not.
In
certainly
certain
not.
Circles as the, what, camper captain?
Yes, camper captain.
Wow.
And that is assigned to, you know, 8 of the best campers of the oldest age group, which is like going into 10th grade.
Wow.
So,
see, I never
did not happen for
I didn't
me.
Know, again, all the camps I went to were basically just like, I guess Christian or atheist, but mostly trashy kids.
Yeah.
And they were participating in the tug of war. But I never realized that the Jewish kids were
also doing
tug of war. It seems
yeah.
It seems below you guys, if I can be...
Honestly, it wasn't our favorite event.
Yeah.
Our favorite event was this thing called rope burning.
Okay. Tell us more.
Both ropes, I see.
I'm intrigued.
So both teams have two large setups with wooden poles, and then there are two ropes attached to these poles. So there's a higher rope and a lower rope.
Okay.
And the oldest group of boys are, again, going into 10th grade, are responsible
Studs.
For building a fire, like Survivor style with okay. whatever, flint and something like kindling. And they have to build a fire and burn down these two ropes. And they compete to do it the fastest, both teams.
Arson. You guys go to camp and they teach you arson.
Exactly.
In the woods. Not. This is not
we
available
need to know how to
at
escape.
California
we're Jews.
Jewish
we need to
camp.
Know these things. Yeah. And what's going on behind these groups of boys is there's a whole crew of like every aged camper doing a different task. And it's like a huge honor if you get picked to be in this. It means you're like either a great athlete or like a favorite, basically.
Popularity.
And so you're either like grabbing sticks from the woods, breaking sticks, running it from this line to get to the fire builders, which is what the boys are called. They're fire builders. And one summer
this is baffling, by the way.
This must sound so psychotic.
There's people gathering sticks
oh,
for burning.
And the rest of the camp is cheering.
Great
cheering
news,
their
Steven.
Fucking faces off, like build that fire.
You're
higher,
on stick
higher.
Duty.
Stick duty. So there was this one summer where I was an animal. And an animal is responsible for diving into a pile of wood and grabbing the first couple of batches of wood to make it to the first line.
Why do you got to dive in the pile?
Because it's like cool. Everyone's like, dive in. It's like, you know, an out-of-body experience.
that's what everybody
it's
was like?
Culty. Everyone. This is like, you will die if you don't win this okay. competition. So this one summer I was an animal. I'm like diving into this pile of sticks. I'm running, whatever. Basically one thing leads to another. And I got absolutely slashed in the face with like a very sharp stick and I'm wearing goggles, but my goggles had moved to the side and I got slashed all across the face. My eye slashed open and I am bleeding out my eye.
Yeah.
Just fucking
Good.
Bleeding out my eye.
Nice.
And
this is gonna help the reputation for the makeup sesh.
That is what was going through my head. I was like, I can't stop. I'll be a fucking quitter. Everyone will hate me.
Yeah.
So I continued the full like 28 minutes or whatever it took with blood gushing out of my eye. My mask is filled with blood.
Yeah.
Filled with blood. And at the end, we won. Praise be.
Obviously.
I ran.
Dedication.
I ran to the head of the camp and I was like, I think something happened. And the head of the camp was like, you have to go to the hospital now. Mind you, I'm wearing face paint. I was on the red team. I'm wearing like so much face paint, but I'm also bleeding.
And somewhere that lucky young rapscallion that we made out earlier is like, no, it's,
I think he was
no,
proud.
It's Scarface and I will make out with her again.
And so we're in Wayne, Pennsylvania, which is like truly bumfuck nowhere.
Wayne?
Yeah.
That's what it's called, Wayne, Pennsylvania?
That's the town, or the county's Honesdale.
Yeah.
There are no landmarks, so I can't even...
If your town is named after what is clearly the middle name of every serial killer in America...
Exactly.
It's not a good sign.
Not a good place.
Yeah. You don't want to go to camp there.
It was fun. But so we get to the hospital, and a counselor who's probably like my age now, or probably younger... takes me. She has no idea what's going on. She's panicked because she has like a bleeding camper out of their fucking eye. We get to the hospital. We're in the emergency room. The emergency room doctor comes out and he's like, oh, are you here for that rash on your face? I'm like, that's fucking face paint. Do you not see that my eye is like slashed open? That's how moronic these doctors are. Anyway.
Yeah. You're in Wayne, Pennsylvania.
In really good hands.
It's not where the best doctors go.
Exactly. Exactly. And it wound up being fine. I got some stitches in the old
eye and the lid.
And it wound up being okay. I got back to camp. The camp director was like, do you want to call your mom? I was like, yeah, bitch, I want to call my mom. Yeah. Like, I just got wrecked.
Yeah.
So that's...
While you're here for the eye, do you want us to do something about the mole? We can get you on the makeout board by the end of summer if you're willing to play the game.
That was the first summer that I hadn't had a mole, actually. So it was just like a big time for me.
Yeah.
Just really coming out of my shell.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But the first mole-free summer? God.
And I actually made out with a different guy that summer, and he is, I mean... He's so nice. Probably the largest human on planet Earth. Like, they were like, just go hook up with the fat guy. And I was like, down.
So,
I'm into it.
So, skinny weasel kid the first summer.
Yeah.
And now they said she's ready for the hefty man.
Yeah.
you're with the heavyweights this summer in terms of makeouts.
Exactly.
Wow. And so, you were a counselor there?
Yeah, so I was a counselor.
So after these horrible experiences...
Kept coming back.
You were like, you know what? It's going to be better when I'm in charge.
And you know what? It fucking was.
It was better.
It was better.
Nice.
There's this thing at the camp that I worked at called being a Gigi. And that stands for being a girl guy. Don't know how that
Hold
feels.
Hold on. A girl guy?
And it is...
This seems insensitive.
I wonder...
I won't stand for this.
Oh. And the concept of being a girl guy counselor was being a female counselor on the boys' side of camp for the youngest group of boys to act as like a mother figure.
You're the nurturing
or
mother.
A sister, an older sister
right.
figure. Exactly. So every summer, 2 to 4 girls get to be on boys' camp because they are separated. So I was like, I'm doing that and I'm just going to hook up with everyone.
Wow.
And this is my time.
So wait, you're hooking up with campers?
Nope. Not the campers. There were some cuties. But...
We expose all the pedophiles right here. You're hooking up with the dude counselors just
was,
like wet
well,
hot American summer.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I was 17 my first counselor summer, and I lied to everyone and told them I was 18.
So that way you can make out with the older dudes.
Exactly. And one of them got really mad at me when he found
when
out
he found
I was
out.
17.
You guys, you know, fooled around. Then he was like, could I check your ID,
that
by
happened.
The way?
That happened.
That's super creepy.
Yeah.
Why did he want to see your ID? Because he knew what was
know.
Going
he
on.
Was like 26.
Oh, yeah. So no, that is pretty creepy then.
But the age of consent in Pennsylvania is 16.
Nothing to worry about then.
Looking back, I'm a little disturbed, but it's fine.
Yeah. I mean, you were lying to him, but at the same time,
I was young and fun.
Yeah, he knew what was going on.
Exactly.
And also, why is there a 26-year-old being a camp counselor?
Right? There are always those men at camp that are like teachers during the school year, and they like need to do something over the summer. Listen, it's a little sus.
Yeah, it's a lot sus. Yeah. I don't usually say sus. I know that's like a millennial
thing.
I'm here
for it.
You're a millennial?
I am.
So yeah, that's pretty sus.
It sounds natural coming from you.
I would go as far as to even say suspect. I would say the whole word. That's how serious I think this creepiness is.
It's pretty sus.
Let's call him out. What's his full name? And if you know his address, we'll get to the bottom of this. We'll destroy this guy's life. Right now, he's probably working at a Dairy Queen or something.
I actually think he has like a really shitty life.
Good. Listen, when you're 26 and you're still preying on campers and camp counselors,
I know.
Your life isn't going to get good at some point. Anyone who's 26, they're starting their career or they're
or not.
Creepy.
Yeah.
I was more creepy at 26, but I still didn't.
I feel like it was endearing, though.
You were like an
endearing creep.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That's fair.
I was creeping myself. I wasn't wasting my time. So what do you do now?
I work in television.
What do you do?
I am a development executive.
Okay.
I work in animation.
Nice.
With Mike Judge, you may
know him. Yeah, he's one of the best.
And Greg Daniels. So they're my bosses. It's a good time.
Yeah, that's awesome. He makes some of the best things out there. How do you get this job? Did you go to school for that?
Fuck no. I studied nothing in school. Like, I studied communication and rhetorical studies in school. Do you know what that means? Nothing.
That's an actual thing?
Yeah,
rhetorical studies?
Yeah, there were I don't know what I studied. Okay. I took a class that was like how to interview. And it was just like taught me how to get a job because I could like lie through an interview. Like that was an actual class I took.
But that actually
sounds
like...
And I went to private school.
That sounds like the most valuable college class I've ever
worked.
Heard of.
And it's funny because I went to Syracuse, which has like the best communications
sure.
program, but I wasn't in it. And I still got the same job as everyone else. So...
Yeah.
Did you get that?
Yeah, I like that. You let them know, fuck you people who worked hard.
Yeah, exactly.
You didn't know the right people and or make out with the right people.
Damn straight.
All right, and so what does your job entail? What do you do?
I read a lot of scripts.
Okay.
That's
one of the worst gigs out there.
I love it.
You really like it?
It's easy. I get to... I know, I was...
When I first moved out here, one of my roommate got me a job. It was his job, and then he got a real job, and he was like, hey, do you want to read these scripts? I think it was for Madonna had a production company
or something.
And these scripts were terrible, but I was enthralled. I would read like three a day.
It's easy.
This is the worst thing I've ever read. They were always terrible.
You don't have to keep reading if it's bad. That's the thing.
I have to.
Oh, that's a problem. That's a huge waste of time.
There's nothing I like more than hating something.
I do feel the same way. Sometimes I have to do write-ups on scripts, and if they're really bad, I'll just fucking bash them. Like, absolutely just slap them around and just really over the top.
There was a guy who used to be the manager here named Dean. Great guy. Mm-hmm. He had these weirdos that would hang out at the Comedy Store, and we used to call them the Dean 15.
Oh, no.
And they were 15 random people who served no purpose but were always here because they knew the manager. And so one of them, we called him Andre the Giant. He was just this large, kind of goofy-looking
dude. That's
who
I hooked up with at camp.
Yeah. This is probably
him.
Yeah,
that's him.
He wrote the script, and Dean was like, bro, you said you read scripts, right? Will you read this? And I'm like, yeah. So I read it. This thing is 130 pages, which is...
That's too long.
That's an epic movie. And it was a skateboarding vampire movie. So obviously,
I'm not down.
Yeah.
Like,
so I'm reading this and I'm like just enthralled. I'm like 30 pages in. I'm like, this doesn't even make sense. Where does it go from here? And at the very end, I'm getting to the end. I'm just like, this is insanity. Where is this going? And the very last page is like page 133. It just says to be continued.
Stop.
And I was like, what?
Did he just write a trilogy?
He must have.
Smacked you in the face with a damn trilogy.
Yeah. So I gave the script back to Dean. I'm like, dude, unbelievable.
Oh, no.
Just one of the worst things I've ever read, and I can't wait to read the sequel. He's like, bro, it's not that bad. I go, it's horrible. It's a 2-hour-plus skateboarding vampire movie. Yeah, but no one's going to watch that.
Oh, yeah.
And I was so disappointed that Hollywood never bought it, because it could have been something.
But now imagine getting paid to do that.
to read that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And give feedback.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
I was getting like $25 a script or something.
That's good.
Back then. So, and I only did it for maybe 2 months before, you know, I had bigger things to do here, like park cars at the Comedy Store for $20 a night for 9 hour shifts. Oh, because God. They treat you right around here back in the early 2000s.
I love to hear that.
Yeah. And so do you like your job?
I love it.
Yeah.
I like literally fucking love it. This is the first job where I've been happy. It's just fun. I get to meet cool people and like read cool scripts. I'm very smart. As you can see, I can only think of the word cool. But it's awesome. It's really fucking great. I get to make TV shows.
It's a little sus that you don't know a better word.
It's great.
What's the worst job you've ever had?
I worked at Jerry Springer.
What'd you do for Springer? Were you in charge of chairs?
I worked for Jerry Springer and Steve Wilkos, which was his like piggyback show.
Yeah, yeah, that was the bald security guard who took over.
Yes, so I was a studio PA and a casting PA. I had to give lice checks to the guests.
Lice checks?
Yes.
There was such a frequent lice issue.
Yes.
With guests that they were like, get JC in charge of lice.
Indeed. I had to like pat them for knives and drugs.
That makes sense.
For the casting outreach, we would just like target people who have previously been sex offenders, and I would call them on the phone and literally say like, have you molested lately? And like, do you want to talk about it on the air?
Is this job still available? I feel probably, like I could thrive in this.
I quit after maybe 3 months, and I saw that job posting many times again. I don't think people stay there very long.
No. Ken, listen, Rick Ingram over at the Springer Show, man. I see you did some diddling in the past. Is this something you're still into, and could we talk about it?
And they would talk about it like it was like a marathon or a game. We would have meetings, and executives would be like, do you have a rape? Do you have a molest? Like, do you have a, whatever.
It's a cold world.
It was
in this industry.
Really something.
Have you ever considered calling the 26-year-old from camp and trying to get him on as a pervert?
Listen, I have not.
The makeout sesh was great, but I've got a gig for
you. He honestly would probably do it. He was like such a ham, such a weirdo.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And so you did 3 months at Springer.
I did.
You were in charge of wrangling molesters and checking for lice.
Yep.
So when you're doing this, are you fresh to LA?
This was actually in New York.
Oh, okay.
I'm from New York and it was in Stanford. So that was my first job out of college. I was commuting from my parents' house to Stanford and I was there every night until 3 a.m. Like they would keep us there. I would get in 7 a.m. keep us there 3 a.m. It was fucked up.
Yeah, that's a terrible gig.
Yeah, it was awful.
How often did you find lice?
Find what?
Lice.
Oh, actually never.
Never.
Honestly,
it sounds like
never.
You're probably not that good at what you do.
There was clearly a lice issue. I barely tried. I put on gloves. I was like, okay, good. Like I would do like a slight peek. I was like, get some fucking professional to do this. Like, who am I?
At least hire someone with experience. Get a elementary school nurse.
Exactly.
Bring her in. You know, this lady's, she's seen.
I also like didn't even know what to look for. I was not trained. Like, they were just put on gloves, do a little look around. We couldn't say the L word either. We would call it L kit. Like, are you going to do the L kit? And then we'd say yes. It wasn't for me.
Why was lice banned? Why was the word lice banned?
I don't think that the producers wanted the guests to know what we were doing. But like, what the fuck else would I be doing? Like rummaging around in your scalp?
You mind if I just check your roots real quick?
Yeah. Want to make sure your color is up to date for the camera.
Unbelievable. Everything,
Jerry like loves the fresh look.
Everything matches so nicely. Yeah. Just, you know, no egg
sacs.
No
touch-ups here.
Wow. I mean, that's one of the most insane jobs I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And so when you call a molester.
Yeah.
And so, first of all, how do you have the molester database? Is this like a registered sex offender?
Yeah. There are a few registered sex offender databases that are public.
And their phone numbers are listed?
Their phone numbers are not listed, but Jerry Springer, they had a book and we would call it Carts. I don't know why, but it was a book full of like numbers that we had, or we were able to get somehow. I don't know, but we had like a binder full of numbers.
The binder of molester numbers.
Yeah.
That's good TV right there.
And I guess at the end of the Steve Wilkos show, they'd be like, if you're this, this, or this, like leave a message at this number. So I was responsible for checking those messages and calling those people back as well.
How insane are those people?
Oh, like just sad, to be honest.
Yeah.
The same people would call constantly. I don't even know what the fuck they were saying. They were always from like Mobile, Alabama or Akron, Ohio. Those were the two.
Akron?
Those were the two.
This is in response to like, do you know someone who's in love with their cousin?
Yeah. And people would always call and be like, I do. And I'd have to call them back and be like, we're listening.
This is Dale and Akron again. Got another one.
Actually, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
It wasn't, but for you, I'm glad it is.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we so far, again, this is only the fifth or sixth episode, depending on who you talk to. We have never had anyone who's worked in the phoning molesters field.
Glad to be your first.
When you started working for Mike Judge, did he ask you, like, have you ever had to call child molesters?
Not once, and it was a relief.
And you took that class knowing how to answer these questions. All right. And, do you have social media or anything you want to promote?
Totally. You could follow me at JCNAC. That's my handle all across the board. And if you like to hear me talk about camp, you can listen to my podcast.
Nice. You have a podcast dedicated to camp?
I have a podcast dedicated to religion and tradition.
Oh,
and
okay.
We wind up talking about camp a lot.
Sure.
And that's Pray For Us podcast. And you can find us anywhere you get podcasts.
You're still religious?
No.
No.
I don't know.
I never was.
I like the bagels and lox, and I like to have the Jappy attitude, and that's about it.
Nice. A lot of the kids I grew up with would go to these Christian camps, but I was never allowed. And now
it's probably for the
better. Yeah, because they probably, that's where a lot of their makeouts happened. Anyway.
Sounds fun.
Yeah. It's. I think maybe that was my problem, was I didn't have a religious background. Did your father host any camps?
Oh, I spent many a days at Bible camp.
Did you get to make out ever?
No, it was too conservative.
Damn
or
it.
I was ugly, or just ugly, so I don't know.
Maybe you needed to be a little more aggressive, it sounds like.
Yes.
A mole girl? Would you have made out with a mole girl?
Hell yeah, I would.
Hell yeah.
That's what I'm
talking about, yeah. We're all down for mole girls. That's where we're at. All right. Well, thank you for being on. I appreciate
it. Thanks for having me.
We're going to have Sarah come over, and she's going to ask you guys some questions that I missed out on because I have a fucked up brain that doesn't follow the rules.
Totally.
All right. Cool. Thank you. We'll be right back.
Say hi.
All right, we're back, guys. Sarah's here. I never know how to start.
I know. It's every time I listen to the episode, you're like, are we starting?
Yeah. When I used the Comedy Store podcast, I used to always, we'd just start, and then someone would be like, wait, are we going? And I'd be like, yeah, we just started. I don't know how to do beginnings.
This is a really fun episode.
Yeah.
Thank you, Denise. Thank you, JC, for being here.
Thank you.
I think it's very interesting that we have two people that played fake sports.
Yeah. In a lot of ways.
We had a wrestler, someone that was involved in color wars.
Yeah.
Which is a girl growing up in Georgia we were not allowed to talk about.
Yeah. They look down on color wars being promoted openly at camps.
I was not to play that anymore by the time I was ready to go to camp.
Were there any non-white kids at Jewish camp?
Nope.
No. I weren't. I was also... You said you went to a camp with your dad, Denise, right?
Yeah.
But it was more of a...
It was a evangelical Christian camp.
Right. It was like a vacation Bible study. Is that what it's called?
That would be, except we stayed overnight and we just like cried in our bunks.
Right. You prayed to the
devil.
Was
that fun?
To like make sure, yeah.
It was so fun. It was a blast.
So when I moved to LA, I was DJing weddings and bar mitzvahs. Because I had worked in radio, so I knew how to work sound equipment. And because I was doing so many bar and bat mitzvahs, they asked me to be a counselor at a Jewish camp in Malibu. So I was a counselor at Gindling Hilltop Camp. Clap, clap. And
Dang, is that the move, the double snap?
It could be.
I don't know. That was just how we always said it. And these were like some, like, I grew up poor, and like to be teaching at a Jewish camp in Malibu where like
these kids everyone, are doing all right.
Yes. Yeah. And they, and I'm like, what, 22, 23? And these kids, like, were so mean to me. Like, they called me Shiksa the whole time, which I had to look up what that was.
Yeah. That's means, a nice feeling.
It just means not a Jewish person. Yeah.
I mean, it's a little more insulting than that, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I was just a lot of name calling. And then, so I was teaching the theater program there, and so we ended up writing a play. And then there was one point in the play where they had to like throw confetti into the crowd, and the kids forgot to hold on to the bucket and it just launched into just the crowd. The bucket. And it totally like bloodied up a couple people. And I was like, yeah, that's what you guys get for being so mean to me.
Classic Shiksa attitude, by the way. Yeah.
I can't, like, but I also remember going to 4-H camp as a kid. You didn't go to any camps growing up?
Not really.
Rick, I meant to say. I should say your name.
I went to running camp. That's how cool I was. I went to basketball camp when I was like in middle school, and I was the kid who's really bad at basketball. Yeah. Basketball camp, but I just wanted to, you know, go to hang out, not at home for a summer.
Yeah, we had 4-H camp, and that was like everyone.
That's
was...
That's like farming camp.
Yeah, but you were separate. It was called Camp Eagle, so it was more with just nature. But, like, everybody was separated into tribes, and we all had, like, Native Racist. American name tribes. And you really had it out for the other tribes.
Yeah, as they did.
Yeah. I mean, it was really weird. Like, you had full-on color wars, so to speak.
I know what you're saying.
Like, yeah, you get it.
I read you loud and clear.
But it feels like, I don't know, like, when you started wrestling, Denise, did you have to go to, like, a place to learn wrestling?
Yeah, so the promotion I worked for, they were a training school, so you would go to school, like, 2 days a week, and then they would have shows, like, 2 days a week, so none of us are making money.
Right.
But Cincinnati was a hotbed, like, a lot of good people went through there. But we did Southern style wrestling. So the whole point was,
what does that mean?
It's a lot of screaming racial slurs.
A lot were screamed at us, but we would, the whole point was just to scream at the crowd.
Oh.
Like, so if you were a bad guy, like people came just to talk shit. So
nice.
To heckle?
You're a heel,
to
so
heckle. Yeah,
you're
so
just
like,
trying to get the crowd as riled up as possible.
Yeah, so you would just literally walk out and just start screaming at people. Like
it's the Andy Kaufman fighting Jerry Lawler, just telling the crowd they're all trash kind of thing.
Yeah, well, so what? One of my best friends is a WWE wrestler who's a heel. He like famously,
is this Dolph?
Yeah, Dolph Ziggler. He famously loses every match, but he's a really good wrestler from Ohio, and so I feel like Ohio is kind of like this hotbed for wrestling because a lot of the colleges there have really good wrestling programs. Mm-hmm. Did you like,
so
why move to Cincinnati? Like how did you get from Minnesota to Cincinnati?
So I rode a bunch of independent promotions and Cincinnati, I felt like I could afford to do it. At the time, HWA had a contract with WWE to like train people.
Mm-hmm.
I think Dolph actually went to Louisville and trained for a while.
Oh, he might have, yeah.
But which they kind of took over everything.
Oh.
But the people, so one of my best friends in wrestling, he was the best man in my wedding, was Carl Anderson, who went on to do Japan. He was in WWE. And he was the guy who made me be a stupid mad scientist. So fuck you, Carl Anderson.
I think it's a great gimmick, honestly. I would watch The Mad Scientist.
I will turn you into a goat.
it's such a good plot, especially for Southern style people. Like, that's voodoo. That might be real. She might turn us into goats.
What was your music? What was your entrance?
So,
Did you remember?
Yeah, it was super creepy. It was like a remake of Ring of Fire, but it was like a rock version of it. So like it had like the big kind of creepy vibe at the beginning. But the whole thing with that was I would walk out with a potion, which was literally Gatorade, and like they would put Alka-Seltzer in And like, I would like throw it on somebody or some I was like, I don't even want to do that. And whoever went in the ring after us, like they would have to bump in Gatorade all night. They were like, I hate you so much.
That's awesome.
So you, what was your name, your wrestling name?
It was Dr. Melvin Winkleman.
Dr. Melvin. What was your name before you was your name before you transitioned?
I normally don't give that out.
Yeah.
Dead name and all that stuff. But
yeah, good for you.
But
Dr. Melvin Winkleman was your wrestling name.
Was the wrestling name. So for me, I would just like pray. I read a Mick Foley's book, mm-hmm. and Mick Foley's book was very much like, he would talk about being Mankind, where it wasn't really him, but he would use those emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I tried to do. Like, you know, all the insecurity, like all the anger, intensity. And like, I would just bring that shit out. Like I did a street fight with these guys. It was like my first big show. Like we had 200 people, big angle, and street fight, you can do whatever you want. Right.
Oh.
So the guy was hanging over like upside down outside the ring, and I swung a kendo stick like a baseball bat, and I hit him right in the forehead. Like there's videos on YouTube.
Whoa.
And to the point like the entire crowd just goes quiet, and I was like, that motherfucker called that, like like it's his fault, like
yeah.
it's not my fault.
Right. No, it's not your fault. It's never your fault.
Yeah,
you're the wrestler. It's their fault for not getting out of the way.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
It was a wrestler anyway, so the kendo stick is, that's a standard weapon. I always thought it was funny when I was watching wrestling and someone would reach underneath the ring and they'd pull out a kendo stick and they'd be like, there's a kendo stick! Like, why is there a kendo stick there? But, you know, there was never a reason why it needed to be there. It was just always there. They were always pulling trash cans and stop signs and stuff out from under the ring.
All kinds of stuff.
And they'd be like, oh, where did that come from?
That just happened to be there.
Well, I think someone planted it.
Props didn't place that.
Yeah.
Or a staple gun. That was a big one for a while.
That was a big one.
Yeah. And Mick Foley was a big fan of the pouring the bag of thumbtacks out in the ring.
Oh, yeah.
That was
and then he would immediately somehow get choke slammed onto the pile of thumbtacks.
It was never the opponent, right?
Yeah. The most exciting wrestling match I ever watched was Mick Foley as Mankind when he got thrown off a cage.
That was awesome.
Yeah, it was like that was the moment that I'm like, whoa, this is great. And then it was like a year later that the guy died. And I'm like, not as cool. But, you know, for Mick Foley, he got thrown two stories off a cage through the Spanish announce table, which... Again, one of the worst gigs in wrestling is to be the Spanish announce table. It always gets busted.
Do you still watch wrestling, Denise?
So it kind of ruined it for me.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's almost like doing comedy. Like after a while, you're like, ah, I've seen this before.
It's like why JC doesn't watch Jerry Springer anymore.
Exactly.
It kind of ruined it. She stopped watching.
Yeah, the lice did it. Yeah, I can't watch comedy anymore. People are like, who do you like watching? I'm like, nobody.
Nobody.
It's the worst art form that ever existed.
I'm sick of it by the end of the day.
Yeah.
So we actually had to buy our own tables. So if
no.
Yeah, so like we were in such a broke-ass promotion. Like we had, unless it was a super big show, a super big match, like we had to buy our own shit.
Wow. Bring your own weapons to break.
Yeah. I mean, I think, well, Dolph always tells me, you know, like he buys all of his own costumes and stuff. And like, he wears pink, like spandex, everything. And so like, and like a lot of animal print. And like, so when he's going through security at the airport, sometimes they open his back and they're pulling
out. Sir, could you explain this?
He's like,
I'm hiding cocaine,
I swear. Is this your bag? And he's like, yeah. And they're like, this is yours. And he's like, yes.
Do you want me to try it on?
This isn't Snookies? You're like, no, it's not Snookies.
Yeah.
Sorry. I wanted to ask like one question for you, Denise, which is like, what is the weirdest or worst question that you get asked that you're just like, I wish people would stop asking?
Oh my God.
I can imagine that there's a long list, but I wanted to just...
Well, and I'm so open on stage, so I'll get like a lot of random people. So it's usually, so here's what I find. It's like when I'm on dating apps, like I'll put post-op trans woman. Mm-hmm. And I get a lot like, tell me about your dick.
Okay.
And I'm like, so apparently nobody knows what that means, because I've never had so many people that wanted my dick until I didn't have one.
Yeah.
All right. That's fair. It's
when they are asking you to tell them about it, do you ever just go into great detail describing it and then just go, just but it's gone?
Yeah, what I love to say is like, yeah, I used to have to tuck it in my sock. It
nice.
Used to be like really, really huge. Actually, I did the roast battle here and I was against like this really skinny dude named Keith Graber. And my clapback on him was, dude, tell your wife to no, you can't borrow my old dick just to satisfy her again.
Nice. God, it's got to be so demeaning to still have a dick and know that
mm-hmm.
it can't be used for good, like the dick that's been chopped off.
Well, I wrote on the Alec Baldwin
converted
roast.
I guess it's not chopped off, right? I don't know.
and Caitlyn Jenner was on that roast, who I know is not the best advocate, but you know, we're writing all these jokes for her to say, and we don't really know what she's going to be okay with saying, and so right. we're just like, we'll write really hard ones, we'll write really light ones, we'll write easy ones. Sorry, that all sounds like very like dick talk, but like she ended up wanting to go super hard, and I wrote this joke that she didn't end up using but that she loved, which was like, people always ask me like, because she's a big golfer, and she's like, people always ask me like, now that I've transitioned into a woman, if I hit off the women's tee, and I always say, I hit off the men's tee. I might be a woman, but I'm not a little bitch.
Nice.
I always feel like there's a certain amount of like clout that you have when you have something that people still want to know about, but that you were like, I'm done with it.
Yeah.
And I do find that fascinating. So anyway, thank you for being so open and honest. Now let's talk about your old dick, JC.
Yeah, my old dick. It was so small.
Don't you feel like this is also a great TV show? Like a transition ex-pro wrestler TV show?
Yes, 100%.
Like this might be what Glow is missing.
Glow. I mean, yes. No wonder it didn't get renewed. No.
Yeah, that's what they needed. They needed to up their game
a little bit.
I wanted to ask you, when is the last time you talked to your dad's family?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I could not even tell you.
You have zero relationship with them.
You know what? Truly zero. My grandma, my dad's mother, passed away very late 2019. Mm-hmm. And I did not go to the funeral, but my dad did go. Mm-hmm. And while my dad was there, he was like, will you talk to my dad for like 5 minutes on the phone? And I said, sure. So we talked for 5 minutes on the phone, and that was it. And that was the last time.
And your grandpa wanted to talk to you, or he just was like, I should
probably
talk to my granddaughter.
I wasn't there, so I don't know the context of what... Right.
I'll talk to the good half of her.
But I'm like, oh, does he send you Christmas? But then I'm like, you don't have Christmas. Yeah.
Well,
do you do Christmas presents?
No, we don't. Yeah. But there was a time when we did. When I was probably like 5, 6, 7, we used to go there for Christmas. But they would give us Christmas cards, and inside it would say like, you'd get a gift if you were Christian. And my other cousins would get gifts. Or like
I'm sure Denise got some of those same Christmas cards.
Yeah, like my cousins would get like $100 bills, and we'd get like singles. Like my brother and I would get
They're
singles.
Like, you're going to be a stripper.
Or be like, this Jewish would be girls. Different if you didn't speak Jewish on that podium that one time.
Don't they know Jewish girls like more money, not just less money in a stack?
Exactly.
God.
Brutal.
Oh, man.
Too
it's
bad.
Like kind of iconic when you think about it, but like
too bad Christ
savage.
Ain't a part of your life. No Christmas presents for you.
But with an Italian accent, so try again.
Oh, my God.
Listen, when I do anti-Semitic talk, I always just do an angry Southern
man. That checks out.
Most of my impressions are actually just stupid Southern people.
I like that.
Yeah. When I make fun of people on stage, some will go, why'd you do the Southern accent? I'm like, because it sounds dumber.
Yeah.
Well, we just did. I mean, growing up, I didn't meet a Jewish person until I was 16. This kid transferred to our school.
Yeah.
And my English teacher loved him because she was, she taught like at an Israeli nunnery. And
classic.
Yeah. And, but she was always teaching us biblical stuff, which I would always get upset at because I was like, you ain't supposed to be teaching religion in school. I know that.
Yeah.
And
Southern
I would
attitude.
Like write little notes, you know, in my AP English class. And she'd just be like, Sarah has an attitude problem. And yeah. I'm like,
she's not wrong.
So I was just like, I just had a lot of questions. I mean, I took him to a couple of dances because I was just fascinated because I just didn't know anything. That. But I also like...
My friend's girlfriend is from somewhere in Georgia. Mm-hmm. And when she met my wife, we were eating at Greenblatt's. And she's like, Sal, what religion are you?
Oh, no.
Asking her, like, what denomination of Christianity? And she's like, Jewish? And she goes, Jewish? Still?
Still?
And Grin's like,
did you grow out of that? Yeah,
Grin's like, what do you mean? And she was like, I didn't know they were still Jews. I thought y'all converted with Jesus.
Oh.
And I'm just like...
Oh, I thought she was going to say for another reason.
No.
Okay,
no.
Good.
I just remember sitting there. I looked over at Corinne, and she was just looking at me like,
right.
Do we have to keep talking to mm-hmm. this person? Like, what?
Anyway, this soup with the giant noodle in it is delicious.
Yeah, yeah. You're at Greenblatt's.
But I don't believe in anything that y'all say. Y'all make... a lovely suit.
I just thought you all converted with Jesus. I'm like, you know, Jesus was not a Christian, right? You know what? Never mind. I'm not going to get into it.
You know what? Let's just leave it to there's only one book of the Bible.
Yeah.
There wasn't two.
I said, just so we're all clear, Satan is my denomination of Christianity. Great guy.
I had another question for you, JC, which is like, where was the makeout spot in camp?
That's such a good question.
Thank you.
Okay.
Which Rick missed, I would like to add.
So, do you guys
I don't want to know because I never got invited to that place.
Do you know the game Gaga? It's a...
Of course not. No one asked me to make out with them either.
So Gaga is a game that's in like a little hexagon court. It's like gated off. It's like wooden... and it's just like a hexagon court, and you smash a ball around with your wrists,
okay.
And you can't let the ball touch your ankles, and that's the game. And if the ball touches your ankles, you're out. Anyway.
Hold on.
There are a whole lot of stuff.
Did you really ask us if we know about that? And then...
Thank
no.
you.
Okay.
We got backup on it. Okay. She's not a crazy person.
It's actually very fun, highly rec, if you guys wanted to play anytime, like super down.
It's very sus to us.
Yeah, when she says rec, she means recommend. Great game.
Yeah, I actually crushed at that game, not going to lie. But so there was this Gaga court, and it was up on this hill, but it was covered by a large tent, and it was very dark at night.
Oh.
So everyone would sneak up to that Gaga court, and there would be like 6 or 8 to 12 couples all at once, just like back-to-back making out with their person of the summer.
Yeah.
That was just fine. With all of us.
And making out, you mean just kissing?
Just kissing.
Okay,
there was
good.
Some like boob stuff occasionally, but just kissing.
And
the
how was
part.
The kissing? Was it?
Probably not good.
Right.
Like,
I definitely remember when it wasn't good. But I
remember.
I don't always remember the ones that were good. I'm just assuming they were fine.
At camp, they weren't good.
Yeah, I
they
can't imagine they were that great.
Yeah,
it was always so rushed.
It's
because
they were asking the wrong guys to make out.
Yeah, the lonely guys always know what they're doing. They study.
I was crushing it from the very first kiss.
Well, we only had a certain amount of time to, like, sneak away.
Yeah.
How do you sneak away? That's my other question.
Oh, it was wild. It was, like, really the Wild West.
Wild.
there was this thing called Under the Lights, where the oldest, like, three groups of kids would get to hang out under the lights, which was, like, under a basketball court for an hour after the evening activity. So, like, from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock. You could hang out.
Little social mixer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm. But you would only have a few seconds to like run up to the Gaga court and like make out with your person. So we would like literally be like, okay, we have 5 minutes. Go. You'd run up, make out for four and come back.
Dang.
Good times.
The four
so, like,
quick
would...
4 minute sesh.
Yeah.
And you
head
both
back down.
You're not sleeping in the same building. So
no.
You have agreed to meet at a certain time.
Yeah. Or you would like give them a look from the opposite end of the under the light section at the basketball court and just like be like, okay, we're going now. Because you wouldn't want to see people, you wouldn't want to be seen walking together because then you'd get stopped. So yeah, you would have to like give a signal or plan a time.
And the people in charge were like, sure are a lot of solo walkers this evening.
Exactly.
I was gonna say, when
IBS, all the Jews need to go to the bathroom. Yeah.
Like, but when you were in charge, did you suss it out? Like, did you know? Cause you're...
Oh yeah, I didn't care though, cause I went to camp there. So I was like, go off. Like, as long as you're not giving like blowjobs, I don't care. Like, do you?
Jeez.
Oh my God.
What a jerk.
I haven't used the word blowjob in a minute. That felt weird.
What a jerk. Just let a kid get blowjobs.
Denise has
Did you ever stand anybody up? Like, just
no, because I was such a loser. I was just happy to hang with any boy. I was like, yeah, no, never stood anyone up, never got stood up. It was, you know, all good.
Wow. This is a real love story, yeah. I think. This whole episode is just about finding
the rejected wrong
person.
Yeah.
And learning from it and moving to LA and forgetting about them.
Yep, that's what it's always
and
about.
And dicks. A lot of dicks.
Just forgetting about so all the bad dicks in your life, moving to LA and moving on. Sorry, Rick.
There's a lot of dick pic talk on the podcast, which is exciting and frightening at the same time.
Yeah, you're usually the only dick in the room, so then, and now you are literally one of the only ones.
It's the role I was born to play. The non-making out dick.
All right, good episode.
Yeah,
thank you guys
you.
So much for being on.
Thank you so much.
Everybody follow Denise and JC. And then if you would also like to be a guest, please DM Ingram Pod on Twitter or Instagram.
We have a live show as well.
We're doing our first live show October 13th at the Comedy Store. At 8:30 p.m. It's also the launch of the record label at the Comedy Store. So we'll be drawing names out of a hat. So if you want to recommend anybody to come or if you would like to be here, those tickets will be on sale at the Comedy Store website. And we'll be posting about it as well. So thank you all for listening.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Okay, good night.
If you'd like to be a guest on our show, please DM Ingram Pod on Twitter. That's Ingraham Pod on Twitter.
Goodbye to everyday people.
Special thanks to the Comedy Store and to Brian Rips for the dope-ass music.